Hello and welcome to a special edition of Jazzology on Jazz FM 91, brought to you with the help of our friends at RBC. Now, on this show, we shine the spotlight on emerging musicians, usually focusing our attention on music students. But for this month, we are showcasing the artists who were chosen to be part of this year's Discover Women in Jazz. Like another one of our guests in the series this year, it's kind of hard to describe Virginia McDonald as someone who's emerging because she is in demand as a band leader, side person, and composer. She performs regularly across Canada, the U.S., and Europe. She's performed at international jazz festivals and in some of the world's most prestigious venues, including Kerner Hall, Ronnie Scott's in London, Birdland, and more. She's worked with the likes of Ira Coleman, Harold Mayburn, Jeffrey Keyser, Rodney Whittaker, Pat LaBarbera, Neil Swainson, and many others. And she's a member of the Canadian supergroup, the Canadian Jazz Collective. Add to that the masterclasses and workshops she's done at McGill, U of T, St. FX, the Global Music Institute, and more. And you can understand why we are very excited to have you discover Virginia McDonald. Hello!
Hey, Heather.
How does it feel when you hear all that? Do you feel like, wow, I've done a lot? Or do you feel like, okay, I can see the things that I still want to do?
I think that it's always a bit of both.
Yeah.
For sure. And I'm definitely more on the modest side.
You are.
As well.
Yeah.
So there's that part of it as well. But there's always room for more.
Let's go back. I mean, the one person I didn't mention in that list of musicians with whom you've worked is your dad, Kirk McDonald. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming you probably were bitten by the bug very early. But tell us a little bit about how you got into music to this regard anyway.
Sure. Well, it's funny. It wasn't ever really a question for me.
Yeah.
I was born and immediately surrounded, immersed by music. And, you know, I heard the sound of my dad practicing, playing music for hours a day. Mm-hmm. And so the sound of jazz was always there in my ear. And it was kind of a constant in my life from as early as I can remember. So I started playing quite young. My first instrument was actually recorder, as it is for a lot of young kids. And from there, my parents were talking about enrolling me in a really great community music school in Toronto, the Humber Community Music School. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was around 6 or 7 at this point, and they had kind of laid out a bunch of different instruments for me to pick which one I gravitated towards. Mm. And so I think there was a saxophone, there was a flute, guitar, piano, and then there was a clarinet, and I saw it and my eyes just lit up and I went, oh my God, that's the one that I want to play.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you know it? Like, was your dad playing it around the house? Because it's normally a doubling instrument, right? Mm-hmm. For a lot of woodwind players, they'll maybe do sax,
right?
Double on flute, clarinet, maybe even oboe. How much experience did you have with the instrument before spotting it that day and thinking, that's what I want?
I think basically none. I did not hear my dad practicing much clarinet, if any, around the house.
Yeah.
I think it was kind of collecting dust in a closet somewhere, most likely. But I think there's just something about the key work and the mechanisms that I just gravitated towards, and I thought it was such a beautiful looking instrument. And I also think that maybe part of it subconsciously, even at that age, I was thinking, oh, well, I don't really want to do the same thing as this guy. I don't want to play saxophone.
Nice.
And so that was it for me, that kind of started what has been, I guess at this point, a 22 year journey on this instrument.
Amazing.
Yeah.
We, just before we pressed, turn the mics on, we were talking about a conference you were just at.
Right.
And it was an international conference that's been going on for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
With, I think, did you say 1,500?
There was 1,700 clarinet players. And so it's called Clarinet Fest. Which is, as I was saying to you, basically what it sounds like. And it's put on by the International Clarinet Association. So they've been doing this for 50 years. And it's in a different place around the globe every year. This year it was in Denver. And I was really lucky enough to be one of the headliners, which was really fun for me. Super cool.
There's the modesty, not luck. There's a reason you were asked to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You said, and probably understandably, a lot of the players were classical players.
Yes.
Were you ever tempted to go down that road to do a little bit more classical work? Or were you always just, I'm going to stick with jazz?
I think for me, it's just what I gravitated towards. It's what my ear gravitated towards. And the interesting thing, part of my development that's probably different than a lot of other clarinet players is that I studied with a lot of saxophone players who doubled on clarinet. Mm. So there were techniques that I picked up that were more in line with a saxophonist in terms of, you know, my embouchure, how I produce sound, put sound through the instrument. And when I finally started taking lessons with a legit clarinet player when I was older, like in high school, it was at that point that I realized that a lot of the things that I had learned were more in line with what a saxophone player does.
Interesting.
So I don't regret my journey at all. And I love classical clarinet. It's absolutely beautiful, but very different, too. Very specific sounds, different technique, and different concepts.
Yeah.
But that idea still appeals to me. I actually do some work with Ensemble Vivant in Toronto, some really great musicians. But this is still a very new thing for me. So it's kind of cool to come back now in my later 20s and play some classical music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of music, we're going to go to your music list next.
Yes.
And we start off with Jimmy Giuffre. And is it Jesus Maria? Is that how we would say it?
Oh, I'm not sure. You'd have to ask Carla Bley. It's actually Paul Bley on the recording, so Carla Bley's ex-husband.
Yeah.
And so Carla Bley composed this tune, and she has a beautiful version of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular version by Jimmy Giuffre, so Jimmy Giuffre, Paul Bley, and Steve Swallow, you know, I didn't really have that much exposure to clarinet players when I was younger.
Okay.
Within the jazz lineage, there's just not that many jazz clarinet players out there. And so when I heard this album for the first time, it really blew my mind. Mm. And it kind of just widened the horizon in terms of what I was able to see clarinet players doing in the jazz realm. So it was kind of just like a breakthrough moment for me hearing this.
We're going to check it out right now. This is from 1961, the Jimmy Giuffre 3. And this is Jesus Maria on Jazzology with our guest this week, Virginia McDonald.
Thank you.
The tune, Jesus Maria, written by Carla Bley, played there by the Jimmy Giuffre Three. And that is one of the tunes brought in by our guest this week on Jazzology, Virginia McDonald. I love what you were saying earlier about, you know, the jazz background, and it changed your sound. Because you do have a very rich sound, probably one of the rounder, richer sounds that I've heard on clarinet. And I mean, I played clarinet for 5 or 6 years. I think the first time I heard you play, right, I told you that. I'm like, I've been playing it for years and I hated it. How do you describe your sound? And is that something that you've actively worked to achieve? Or is it something that just kind of happened by the virtue of the fact that you studied the way you did?
I think, it's a mix of a bunch of different things. And I think one of the advantages that I had is that I started playing so young.
Yeah.
And so I was around 6 or 7 when I picked up the clarinet. And again, I was really surrounded by music at that point. So I was always listening. And one of the big things for me is that I was listening to different instruments, rather than my own instrument. So I think that kind of informed me, perhaps in a different way than many, in the sense that I listened to a lot of saxophone players, I listened to a lot of trumpet players, and the other thing is I listened to a lot of vocalists as well. And so I really tried to let those things inform my playing and my sound as much as possible. And for me, you know, specifically thinking about the trumpet and voice, and certain facets of both of those instruments, if we're thinking of the voice as an instrument, I really wanted to bring that to the clarinet and kind of try to round out some of the shrillness that we can get into in the higher register. The clarinet can be a very piercing instrument, for better or worse. And a lot of the times, unfortunately, it happens to be worse. And so I was thinking, okay, how can I bring something a little bit more mellow, something a little bit more rounded, something a little bit softer into how I interpret and play this instrument? And so I found that listening to trumpet players, saxophone players, vocalists, they all kind of had that flexibility to what they were doing on the instrument, in a way that I wasn't hearing quite as much of on clarinet, just because there weren't as many references for me, possibly. But that was a huge part of my development, just in terms of finding my sound on the instrument. But that being said, it wasn't something that I consciously sat down and tried to spend a lot of time on. I think it kind of came out of playing all the time and hearing a lot of music as well.
One of the questions I like to ask people is something about how you describe your own musical sound. Because let's face it, you know, from applying for, you know, grants and festivals and this sort of thing, they'll always want to ask, you know, describe your sound in 100 words or less. So how would you describe your sound if someone's discovering you for the first time, as we are sure there are people doing on the show? How do you say, okay, well, this is what I sound like?
Oh, that's so difficult. I think the first word that comes to my mind, and it's not necessarily a musical word, but honest. I try for my music to be both how I compose and how I play to be an honest representation of myself and who I am as a person, whatever I may be going through on any given day or night. And so that's kind of where everything else comes from. So I really am trying to put myself into what I do, and who I am as a musician. It's those things are always interconnected for me. Absolutely. And so, you know, like I said, I listen to a lot of vocalists, and early on, that's kind of become a big thing for me. How can I sing through my instrument? So I'm trying to, I'm basically a vocalist trapped in a clarinetist's body. Because I definitely cannot sing.
That was going to be one of my questions.
I wish, but no, God no. So, you know, how can I make this instrument sound as vocal as possible? So that was another thing for me, just really trying to have personalness to my sound and bringing that to the table.
Talk about Sarah Vaughan, because she's on your music list.
Yes, absolutely. And this is another great example of this. This particular recording is one that was so influential to me, and I think is still kind of up there as one of my desert island picks. And so it's a great album with Clifford Brown is featured on it. And for me, I've just listened to this album so many times, and every time I hear something new, both in how Sarah interprets these beautiful tunes and how Clifford plays in particular. And so for me, this is another thing. Like in the jazz tradition, we play our own music oftentimes, but we also play a lot of great American songbook standards. And so for me, when I started to get a little bit deeper into the music, listening to vocalists and really understanding the lyrics of whatever music I was interpreting was a very important thing for me, just to be able to kind of translate what I'm doing on an instrument with no voice, no lyrics, and try to get some of the integrity of the song and the meaning behind what I'm doing. So I think that Sarah Vaughan is one of the master interpreters of this music, and so this is a really special one for me.
And broad range stylistically. I mean, she's sang everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Is there something about this particular tune? Does a September song stand out for any reason for you?
I think so. The other thing about this particular song is Clifford Brown's solo on it is just like a masterclass in how to play this music. And I do a lot of teaching, and this is one of the examples that I use just in terms of how to construct, for me, almost perfect solo. Mm. Everything about it is really special. And one of the things that always has stood out to me about this solo is how singable it is. There's faster parts, more double time lines that he's playing, but everything is so melodic and beautiful. And it sounds like it was almost pre-constructed, or it's something that he wrote out before playing it. But at the same time, you can tell that he's just playing from his soul. And so there's that sense of him coming out as a person through his music and trumpet playing. So that's something that really appeals to me, too.
We're going to check it out now. Sarah Vaughan from the album she made with Clifford Brown. This is September Song on Jazzology with our guest this week, Virginia McDonald.
From May to December, but the days grow short when you reach September. Turns the leaves to flame. One hasn't got time for the waiting game. Thank you.
Sarah Vaughan, September Song on Jazz FM 91. You are listening to Jazzology, brought to you in part by our friends at RBC. Our guest this week is part of the Discover Women in Music series. It is Virginia McDonald. We're going to chat more with her and hear more of her music right after this. You're with Jazzology on Jazz FM 91. This is the Discover Women in Music edition, where we are focusing on some incredible artists all August long, and Virginia McDonald is our guest this week. You've worked in a bunch of different formats, bunch of different styles and sounds. What's your favorite, maybe, let's start with ensemble size. Do you have a favorite ensemble size to work with?
Oh, that's hard. No, not particularly. Yeah. I'm so easygoing. And I just love it all. Like, that's the thing. Everything is different in its own way. The one that kind of appeals to me whenever I get to do it is a larger ensemble, because I just don't get those calls quite as often, because clarinet is not quite as common in that kind of setting with a larger ensemble, big band. So whenever I get a chance to play in those settings, I'm like, oh, man, this is super cool. But I feel like the setting that I usually play in is usually quartet, quintet, which is great too. But yeah.
Okay, so then we'll do A or B. Side person or leader?
Oh, that's even harder. You know what? It's interesting. I love being a leader. I'm really enjoying being a side person right now.
Wow.
I've never expected to work often, at least as a side person, when I was younger.
Right.
I just thought, you know, okay, most people want saxophone, trumpet in their band. They don't really want clarinet. It's not as common. I'm going to have to hustle to write my own music, to book my own gigs, and to kind of make my own way as a clarinet player. And it's been one of the most pleasant surprises for me over the past few years is how many amazing musicians who I respect have asked me to play their music and be in their band. So it's been a really fun journey for me, actually, being a side person. So
And you also deliver in a beautiful way. I mean, there's a texture that you add, a musicality that you add as well. And there's, I get the sense that this overall joyfulness when you're playing.
Oh, well, of course. I think that that's always there. I think when you love something, that comes out. That's evident, for sure. But I do think that the clarinet has a very different sound, you know, and people are kind of starting to become aware of that. And like I said, there's very few reference points in the past, especially to hear clarinet, you know, maybe in a quintet or sextet setting.
Yeah.
And so now we can kind of hear more and more how it fits in with these different instruments. And I do think it's a very unique and beautiful sound.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Going back to your music list, we've got some Charlie Hayden here. Yes. From the Montreal tapes with Jerry Allen and Paul Motion. Yes. Tell us a little bit about the album and the song we're going
to
hear.
Yeah, so a bit of a backstory. I went down to Berkeley to study with Terry Lynn Carrington back in 2018, I think. Mm-hmm. And so it was actually the pilot kind of year and program for what eventually became the Jazz and Gender Institute at Berkeley.
Okay.
So I was there doing a 5-week workshop with her and a really great ensemble of women at the time. And it was like really in so many ways what opened the door to discovering all of these amazing women in this music that I had not been aware of before. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we got to play the music of Jerry Allen. We learned about Mary Lou Williams and so many other great female women composers that I had not been aware of. And at that point, I was already in my early 20s, and I was going, how have I never heard of these women before? What mm-hmm. is going on? Mm-hmm. But this is one of the songs that we actually played. And so it was Jerry Allen's kind of tribute to Eric Dolphy, who she actually did her master's thesis on. Wow. So it's a really, really cool song and super interesting music.
We're going to check it out now. This is from the Montreal tapes with Jerry Allen and Paul Motion. This is Charlie Hayden, Dolphy's Dance on Jazzology. Thank you. That was Dolphy's Dance from Charlie Hayden, Jerry Allen, the Montreal Tapes with Jerry Allen and Paul Motion. And that was brought in by our guest this week on Jazzology, Virginia McDonald. I'm curious about whether or not there have been things that stand out in your mind as kind of, oh, yeah, I remember this is a key developmental moment, concert opportunity for me as an artist. Have there been any things that have stood out for you?
Oh, yeah. There's a few that come to mind. And I think that workshop, getting to work with Terry Lynn, was such a huge thing for me. And, you know, maybe just to talk about that for a little bit. I didn't really have quite that many female mentors in music growing up. My first teacher actually was the great Jane Fair. And from Toronto.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was really amazing female musicians who I worked with as I got older, went into post-secondary music at Humber College, like Nancy Walker. But it was few and far in between.
Right.
And as a young woman trying to, you know, come up in this music, and being a young woman is hard enough as it is, but, you know, not really having a sense of community in terms of peers surrounding you and also people you can look up to, it can be isolating, absolutely. And so getting to study with Terry Lynn and also be in an ensemble with, I think there was 7 or 8 women at the time, it was so eye-opening for me. And it was kind of, in a larger sense, that first time that I felt that bigger sense of community, to have that connection to all of these young women who were playing and who had kind of gone through and lived the same experience and didn't have anyone to talk to about it either.
Right.
So I really point to that experience as just something that skyrocketed my confidence and my ability to play this music as a woman.
Yeah.
And so the work that Terry Lynn is doing is so amazing and so necessary.
Yeah.
Very, very important.
Well, we're seeing, you know, we're seeing Artemis. We're seeing the Ostara Project with whom you were touring.
Yeah.
Do you get a sense now, working with, you know, the other musicians in Ostara and working with Terry Lynn, how important is it to continue focusing on this, focusing on women? Because I know something, like I've talked to Colleen Allen about this, and Colleen said, you know, she said, eventually I hope that it's not going to be an issue. We're just going to be able to say musicians and not have to say female musicians or female instrumentalists.
Yeah.
Are you getting that sense? Are you seeing it happening? And I wonder how much further do you have to go before we can say, okay, let's drop the female part.
I think that's the goal. In the end, and I have no problem identifying as a female musician because that's what I am, right? It's not like a political statement to be a woman playing this music, or it shouldn't be at least. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there's still work to be done, absolutely. I mean, the truth is that, you know, we're still a minority in this music, and I think underrepresented in history. And in the culture, even though there have always been incredible female composers, arrangers, and musicians who have existed, but they have kind of been pushed down and ignored and not allowed to enter the discourse. So I think that's slowly changing. And it's happened in a sense. It's slow, but it's been fast. But there's still a lot of work to be done because it's just starting to happen, I think. So
finally.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
I feel that, I mean, it's a different thing for me as a singer because, you know, there have always been women behind the microphone singing, even more so than men.
Right.
It's almost the flip side. Mm-hmm. But it's so good to see it happening in other areas of the music, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to hear something from you now, one of your tunes, Up High, Down Low. Love that. Tell us a little bit about this tune, you know, the inspiration. What do you want people to know about the tune we're going to hear?
It's funny. This is actually one of the first tunes that I wrote, or among the first tunes that I wrote. So I wrote this when I was still in college, actually. But I still like coming back to it. It is what the title says. It's kind of meant to represent, the various highs and lows of our lives and what those states are and how they're connected and, you know, how that duality of both of those states can exist. And So it's, you know, there's sadness, but there's also happiness to the song, to life, all of that. This is a really great band that I put together for this recording. So, yeah.
We're going to check it out. This is Virginia McDonald with Up High, Down Low on Jazzology.
Thank you.
That is our guest on Jazzology with a tune that she wrote and played. That's Up High, Down Low. Virginia McDonald joins us this week as part of our Discover Women in Music series. Now, I know people are going to want to find out more about you. How can people find you, follow your career, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, they can go to my website, so virginiamcdonald.ca, and I'm also active on Facebook, Instagram, well, I was going to say Twitter, but maybe,
we don't know anymore.
Maybe not so much anymore.
No.
Virg, V-I-R-G-F-M on Twitter and also Instagram, and then also on YouTube.
And you've got all the links on your website.
Yes. Yeah,
perfect.
It's all up there.
What's coming up next for you? What plans do you have going forward?
Yeah, so I'm actually hitting the road again next week. I'm going to New York and Michigan to do some gigs and recording, and I will be doing some great stuff here in Toronto and Montreal in August, playing with a great bass clarinet player from Baltimore, Todd Marcus. We are going to be performing at the Prince Edward County Jazz Festival August 17th, here in Toronto on August 18th, and in Montreal on the 19th. And last but not least, I will be performing at Jazz FM Studios on August 24th as part of the Discover Women in Jazz series. So very excited about that one.
We are very excited to have you. Thank you for being a part of this. Before we let you go, tell us about the last tune we're going to hear.
Yes, so this is a recording I did last summer with great trombone player Michael Deese, absolutely great band, Jeffrey Keyser on piano, Colleen Clark on drums, Leonie Mateo on bass. So this is composed by Greg Hill, and that's it.
All right. Well, before we hear that tune, we want to thank a few people who have made this show possible. Of course, thanks to our guest, Virginia McDonald. Make sure you follow her career because it is going somewhere. I'm telling you that right now. Thanks to Glenn Cross for production. Thanks to Jelani Watson for pre-production, everything he does behind the scenes. Thank you to RBC for their support. And of course, thank you to you, our listeners, and specifically our supporting listeners. We cannot do this without you. We're going to go out now with the music of Michael Deese. This is Shorty's Tune. And make sure you tune in tomorrow night for Virginia's live to air right here from the Long & McQuaid Performance Hall at Jazz FM 91. Thank you.